Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. I'm Denny Griffin, and my co-host Kim Colton and I will be hosting the show for the next 90 minutes. Kim, greetings.
Thank you, Denny. It's wonderful to be here tonight. I'm looking forward to the show.
Me also. And our guest tonight is Judy Wolf, and Judy's son, Jared, died on October 5th of 2007 in Santa Rosa County, Florida. And he was 19 years old at the time, and the death was ruled as an accidental overdose of drugs, being methamphetamines mixed with alcohol. However, the circumstances surrounding Jared's death have caused Judy to have some serious questions about what actually transpired the night of October 4th and into the early morning hours of October 5th. And Judy is with us tonight. We're going to talk about her concerns and about what happened and where the situation stands now. Judy, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Hi, Judy.
Hi, Kim. Thank you for having me on the show.
And why don't we start off, Judy, if you could you take us and the listeners back to October 4th of 2007? That would be the evening preceding Jared's death. And tell us what was going on that day and what was going on with Jared, and kind of walk us through the events leading up to the morning of October 5th.
Okay. That Thursday, Jared was a PJC college student, and he went to class, and then after class, he worked for a local farmer. And he worked that day, and whenever he got off from work, he was very energetic, very lively, very talkative. We had a nice conversation that afternoon. And he came in and he got dressed and said that he was going to go out for a while. So he left and he went out. The following morning, it was probably about 11 o'clock, I had received a phone call. Can you still hear me?
Yes, loud and clear, Judy.
Yes.
Okay, there was a lot of static there. It was around 11 o'clock. I had gotten a telephone call, and it was to come to Jay Hospital. When I arrived, they told me that it was Sharon, and I was informed that he was already deceased. The investigator was there, and he investigated the case. And, of course, he told me he was going to do the best of his knowledge to find out what happened. So,
okay.
Can you still hear me okay? There's so much static. There's so much static. I don't know if it's from your end or my end.
Are you staying in one spot?
Yes, I am. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, I know.
Yes.
I heard that too. It's kind of coming and going. So.
Yes.
But
okay.
I heard that BTR was having some bad static problems this week. So.
But let me interrupt just a second, ladies. We have another call on the line here, and it may be someone who wants to participate in the panel. Let me just check.
Wonderful.
Caller from 203, you're on.
Hello.
Yeah, is this Vito?
Yes, it is. Can you hear me okay? I'm down the Jersey Shore. Can you hear me okay?
You're loud and clear, Vito. Please say hello to Kim and to Judy Wolf.
Hi, lady. How are you?
Hi, Vito.
Good to have you.
Are you familiar with who Vito is, Judy?
Not really. Why don't you fill me in?
Vito is a private investigator, former Stamford, Connecticut police officer, and has been a highly successful private investigator for several years. And
mm-hmm.
He's been kind kind enough to volunteer to be on with us at least part of the time tonight and talk a little bit about your case. And I believe Vito has some news about a similar case that he's been working on for a while. Am I correct, Vito?
Yes, you are, Denny. In fact, I spoke to the father of the young man who died a few years ago. I spoke to him a couple hours ago, and I gave him the phone number to call in if he wishes, because there's a lot of similarities on it, and it took us 4 years to get some kind of justice where we finally got two people arrested on for the... Oh, hello?
You're still there.
Yes.
Okay. It took 4 years, unfortunately, to get two of the individuals arrested that supplied the drugs that evening to the deceased. So maybe if you hear a John Bria calling in on the line, that would be the father. I got to become very good friends with him over the last 4 years, and it's been a long ordeal from the beginning when the police basically said, hey, you know, no one forced your son to take those drugs. Sorry, case closed. But they, like I say before when I talk about that case, they were messing around with the wrong family. We got involved in it. We had a whole team. We had a couple of lawyers. We had Dr. Michael Bodden, a forensic guy that we brought in. And it just, you know, at least it turned out halfway decent at the end with the arrest and conviction. So. But I'll let the young lady tell her story, because that's what we're here for tonight.
That's wonder. I'm glad that y'all finally got them. Though it took 4 years, at least that family has justice, you know.
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. You want me to back up to where I arrived at the hospital?
Correct.
With my story? Okay. All right. Yeah. I got to the hospital, and of course there was an investigator there, and of course he told me that. There was drugs and alcohol involved, and of course he assured me, you know, that they would get to the bottom of this. So anyway, I had Jared's phone, and whenever we went to leave the surrounding premises, the phone was given to him by another police officer as evidence, because usually a cell phone usually has information that could be valuable. Who the person was talking to that night, the incoming calls, the outgoing calls, and possibly voice messages. So the phone was exchanged. Matter of fact, he had my phone and I had Jared's phone, and I did not realize that until later whenever we were leaving, and we did go by the police station to exchange phones. But my concern is when they did the investigation, the investigator just led me to believe that Jared's death was just an accidental death from the autopsy and from the people that he had questioned that night, which he was at a family member's home. And the family member was like 29, 30, and he had been arrested before, and at the time he was on probation, and there was underage teenagers at his home, in which we were told that he furnished the alcohol for underage minors, which nothing ever happened. So I thought that was kind of strange for a 29, 30-year-old adult to furnish alcohol to minors. The other young lady that came to the relative's house that night, she was like 24, 25 years old. She was a friend of the relative. And matter of fact, he called to invite her over. And Jared did not know her. By what I could gather information from the other friends that was there, because he inquired who was she. So later that night, after everybody kind of scattered and went their own way because a lot of them had to go to work the next day, Jared and his family member and the family member's close friend, they went riding around shining for deer, which is very common up in our area because it's very country up here. And of course, the relative said that they went shining for a while. They went by a Tom Thumb store. The relative went in and inquired about some Lord calves from the person that was working at the Tom Thumb store, which he bought two Lord calves. Both he and his friend said that he took one and she took one, but Jared did not take anything. That the only thing Jared had done that night was to drink a beer. And how many beers, I do not know. The relative said that Jared dropped him off that night around 10:30, 11. He said he wasn't sure about the time. And after Jared dropped him off, he was going to proceed to carry the young lady home. Which, at 1:40 that morning, Jared and the two people that was with him, the family member and his friend, they ran into two other friends on a little dirt road at 1:40. So I know that the family member was not telling me the truth, because how could Jared drop him off at 10:30 when these other two people that was friends with Jared seen all three of them together at 1:40 in the morning? And so, anyway, the young lady, she took Jared to the hospital at 11 o'clock, and her story was they dropped the family member off, and she and Jared went riding around. They ended up spending the night in Jared's truck on family property near my home. And when she woke up about 9:30, 10 o'clock that morning in the truck, in the woods, in October, which the weather is very, very warm, and you would think when the sun comes up about 6:30, the truck is going to get really, really hot. So it's going to wake you up. There's no way that you can sleep in a truck until 9:30, 10 o'clock, without being woken up from the sun and the heat. So she said when she woke up, Jared was not responding. She finally found her way out of the woods. She drove around, went by the hospital. She panicked. She drove around some more, and then she went by the relative's house and could not get him to come to the door. And she said she did not know what to do, so she carried Jared to the hospital around 11 o'clock. And then that's whenever I was informed to come to the hospital.
Judy, can I ask a quick question here?
Sure.
I've actually got a question for you from the chat room, which I'll get into in a second, and just something I wanted to clarify. So when this girl who says she spent the night in the truck with Jared, if she and Jared were where she says they were, on your property somewhere, how far was the hospital from that location, if they were in fact there? How much of a drive?
6 miles.
6 miles. Now, you say that her story is that when she woke up at 9:30 or 10 o'clock or somewhere in that area, Jared was not responsive. She didn't know what to do. She found her way. She apparently operated the truck, drove out of the woods or out of this area they were in. And did you say she then went past the hospital?
Yes.
So she was already in the vicinity of the hospital once that morning, if she's telling me.
Yes.
And then, but she doesn't stop there. Mm-hmm. And she also, now there were, I believe, two cell phones in Jared's vehicle. The girl had a cell phone in Jared's cell phone.
Correct.
And she didn't make
and she
any,
also,
any call to 911 on either of those phones.
No, sir, she did not.
So she drives past the hospital to this relative's house trying to get whatever guidance he could provide. No one answers the door, so at that point, she takes Jared to that back now. She's already been by the hospital once, but she takes him back. And if she woke up at 9:30, which is one of the times she claims to have awakened, that would mean roughly an hour and a half elapsed from the time she woke up and found him non-responsive until she actually took him to the hospital to get treatment.
Yes, sir.
Okay, now let me just ask real quickly the question from the chat room.
Okay.
One of the chatters wants to know if this family relative who
Kip
had called you at 9 o'clock the morning of the 5th. I don't know just where that came from, but that's the question.
Okay, that morning the family member called me around 8 o'clock.
Around 8 o'clock.
And he never calls my home. Just out of the blue, he calls, wants to know if Jared's at home. And I respond, no, Jared has class this morning. And I said, he better be en route to class. And he made a comment, we just tell Jared that I have a ride to my sister's house because they were going to go over there and do some work for his sister. So that was very odd that he called my home that morning at 8 o'clock because if he ever wanted to talk to Jared, he always made a point to call Jared's phone because we've had family problems in the past, and he has just never called my home. And I thought that was very odd later on after I got to thinking about it because I've had friends to tell me that they heard that Jared passed away in his truck in my driveway. And that just kind of rung a bell, you know. Why would he be calling my house looking for Jared?
And one other thing, just to go back to the time frame from when this girl says she woke up and what she did after that, she also, I believe, would have, as she was exiting your property where she says they were parked, she would have passed by your house. Is that
correct? She made a comment in her statement that they were in a wooded area, and she found her way out, and she said she remembered going by a house, which she believed to be Jared's home. And then once she got out to the highway, she took a little dirt road, which she passed many homes en route to the hospital. You know, she had two cell phones in her car, in Jared's truck, plus she had all of these homes that she was passing by, plus she was only 6 miles from our local hospital.
So, and her reason for not using the cell phones, not stopping at your house or any other house, bypassing the hospital the first trip, was all because she was nervous or didn't know what to do? Is that the bottom line?
She commented to the investigator that she panicked and she did not know what to do.
Okay, I'm sorry.
If she was in such a panic, I mean, why did she have in her mind, I've got to get to this relative's house for help?
Judy, did she tell the police initially that she awoke at 8 a.m.?
I'm not sure because I know that she's been questioned 3 different times, and it's like each time she is questioned, her story tends to change.
And she said that she dressed him in the truck.
Yes.
Very difficult.
Oh, yes. Especially for a petite young lady. And if she was so confused, how in the world would she have the knowledge to let's get him dressed before I get him to the hospital? I mean, if I was in a panic, I would go to somebody's house or get on the cell phone and dial 911 for help immediately.
Right. I wouldn't. It would be just too difficult to dress a grown man in a truck.
Right.
Let alone if you weren't in a truck, it would be difficult.
Well,
and
whenever
he was over 6 feet tall, wasn't he?
Yes,
Jared?
He was. Mm-hmm. And he weighed about 100. I'd say about 100. And 165, 170 pounds. And that's dead weight.
Oh, my gosh.
So how in the world could she dress him?
Pause just a second. I'd like to bring Vito in and see so far what he thinks mm-hmm. of what's transpired so far. Vito, do you have any thoughts about this up to this point?
Well, Denny, you have like 2 hours. This is amazing listening to this thing. But a couple points, Denny, that jump out at me. I think Judy mentioned before that one of the subjects, let's say, was on probation. Did I hear that right? For something
yes. They were both mm-hmm. on probation.
Okay. Same type of scenario in my case. The fella, the young man that brought some of the drugs that night with my kid, he was the last one to see him. He was in the bedroom with him when he died. Never called the police, never did anything, just left in the morning, left him there to die. Even Dr. Bodden said he could have been alive in terrible distress for several hours. Nobody helped him. But our guy was on probation for drugs. And he mm-hmm. still had time. He still had time left. So now think about his mind, his state of mind. Well, let's see. What am I going to do here? If mm-hmm. I call the police, they're going to come. They're going to see the drugs over here. I'm the one with them. I'm going to go directly to jail. I'm on probation as it is. So, you know, he mm-hmm. chose to do nothing. You mentioned before that, what was it? The guy calls you in the morning? He called you up in mm-hmm. the morning? All right. Mm-hmm. Our subject, the same guy, he shows up when some of the police cars start gathering at the house. He shows up on foot mm-hmm. and peeks in the deceased window to try to see what's going on in there. So, you know, there's like mm-hmm. so many scenarios here. But, you know, this 26-year-old woman, this is not mm-hmm. a child. This is not a 16-year-old girl, okay? I mean, forget, mm-hmm. I'm tired. I've heard the word confused 8 times already on this show. And I don't want, you know, it's not my show, but I have no way of wanting to hear that word again. Because you do something, you know, you do something like this. She had to go and get guidance from this other guy as to what to do, you know. Can you hear me, Denny?
I can hear you loud and clear, you know.
Okay, there was some static. I'm sorry. But, you know, she had to go drive around and find this other guy to get guidance. With an unresponsive person in the car that's in the process of dying. So, I mean, this is just an absolutely, you know, all my years, 30-something years of being either a cop or a private detective, I still get all bent out of shape mm-hmm. when I hear cases of this nature. You know, there's no guidance she needed. She had to do something, you know, that she's not confused. You know, it's just unbelievable. Now, just to refresh my memory, You say that we got a little cut out before. She dressed him back up. Where in the trunk? Or what did you say?
She claimed that they were in his trunk.
Okay, in the trunk.
And
okay.
Yes, and she ended up on the driver's side, and he ended up on the passenger side
okay.
because they ended up spending the night in
right.
the trunk.
Okay, so then she wasted even more time by trying to dress a grown man up, okay?
Mm-hmm.
She's confused. She don't call 911. Mm-hmm. She seeks another guy miles and miles away to ask for his mm-hmm. guidance, and then she tries to dress a guy. I mean, is this the mm-hmm. most bizarre, stupid thing that anybody wants to hear? For the main reason is that they were worried about going to jail, and that's the whole key
right.
to this hour's show right there. And they tried mm-hmm. to figure out how are we going to do this without getting arrested and going to jail. Well, guess what? So far, they got off on the first part. They didn't get arrested.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean,
right.
that's my commentary, Denny. I mean, it's you know, I sit, I hear these cases every week, and it just gets to
mm-hmm.
me more and more. It's so ridiculous. This woman is a real piece of work. That 26-year-old,
mm-hmm.
that's for sure.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
And whenever she got Jared to the hospital, she identified herself as Jared's girlfriend.
Mm.
And the lady at the hospital that went to Jared first, she said that Jared's seat was slightly slanted. She said, Judy, if you're going to spend the night in a truck all night long with a young lady, you're going to have that seat all the way back. you're going to make yourself comfortable to spend the night. So if something happened to Jared during the night, don't you think that it would have been hard for her to let that seat all the way up?
Mm-hmm. There are a lot of things already here that certainly I can understand you having questions. I mean, I think Vito summed it up nicely, that none of this, or it doesn't make sense, doesn't pass, as they say, the smell test. I'm not going to use that C word again, the Vito. For the night.
Don't let me come here. Don't let me come here, Denny.
I'll switch to the P word, this panic excuse. You know, and we have someone again in the chat room who is apparently familiar with this case, said that crime scene photos of the interior of Jared's truck indicate some clothes were neatly folded and so forth, and don't show the indications of someone in panic mode. It was neat and tidy, I think, is the way the chatter described the interior, the photos of the interior of the truck, not indicating that someone was in this panic situation and totally out of control. And
that's correct.
We haven't even gotten to some of the other stuff yet, but that's just for starters.
Right.
Judy.
For starters.
Yes.
Judy, can I ask you a question?
Yes.
How long did it take the police to tell you that there wasn't anything more they can do about this? Or did they? Obviously it's still open, but are they actively working on this at all or no?
Yes, sir. They have received some new information.
Okay.
But I really had to push it to get the case reopened because they were going to consider it closed. But this was election year for Santa Rosa County.
Right.
So this was a good opportunity for me to push the issue for it to be reopened.
Right. Very good. See, on my case here, what I did, one of the first things I did was I talked to all the high-ranking police officials in neighboring towns that I knew. And each one of them had said to me they would have made arrest on this right away. One high-ranking person said he'd charge him with manslaughter as well as whatever else. And basically that's what has to happen on these type of things. There needs to be arrest. I mean, on my case or even your case there, the rule of thumb, and this high-ranking police official said to me, Vito, if you're having a party or some kind of get-together and I show up and I got the cocaine and Mary shows up and she's got the pills and whatever, and at the end of the night, you lay dead, okay? Somebody has to be arrested for that, you see? On my case, the police told the father, no one forced your son to take those drugs. Case closed.
That's what the investigator told me. He said nobody twisted Jared's arm to drink the alcohol nor take the drugs. How do we know that Jared took the drugs?
Right.
Because Kim and Kip. Okay, the names are out. I wasn't going to use the names, but you know it's so hard. And but anyway, they said that they took two Lorcabs, which he bought that night. Which, you know, that tells me something there. They took the Lorcabs, but they said Jared did not take any Lorcabs. He only had the beer. Is it possible that maybe one of them could have put something in his drink? And then also, with Kemp buying alcohol, which was purchased, which I can prove that, and also the investigator can also prove it too. You know what he said? The teenagers did not have to drink it. That was his personal beer that he brought to his home. That beer was 14-year-old teenagers at his home.
Yeah, there was a 14-year-old there, correct?
Yes.
At the time,
yes, ma'am.
That night? Did anybody ever question the 14-year-old?
Not to my knowledge. They only question very few people.
Yet it seems, Judy, that one of the key things, and we'll get into a letter you received from the state attorney's office in a few minutes, But one of the key things is that in order to charge anyone, they need to prove who supplied the alcohol and drugs. Now, I don't know. We'll see what Vito thinks about this. But it would seem to me, if that was the key thing, I had to, in order to make a case, I had to prove who supplied the stuff.
Uh-huh.
I would want to talk to every person, 14 or 40 or whatever, who was there. I'd want to get on record who brought what, who they saw handing out whatever it was. You know, if it wasn't the person that brought it, maybe somebody sold it there, and then the person who bought it was then distributing it. I don't know. But I can't, you know, I just don't know as I could do an investigation without wanting to talk to everybody who was a witness or potential witness. Vito, what do you think?
Yeah, that's a good point, Denny, because what you do is even if the kids, the parents get lawyers for the kids, you want to try to talk to the person that's the least culpable on this whole case, that maybe it's at this get-together or something but really didn't bring any drugs in the whole bit. Now he's caught up in the middle of this investigation. You want to be able to have a smart parent say to little Bobby, hey, Bobby, tell the truth. Tell the truth what you saw here before you wind up getting in a lot of trouble. See, and you put the pressure on that way. What's so funny, on our case, we had some of the partygoers admit to the police that they stopped and bought drugs and everything else. Imagine that. They even admitted to the police that I bought cocaine. They named the guy on the street they bought it from. That's how bizarre some of these things get. You know, but that's a very good point, Denny, as far as putting pressure on that way, okay? You put pressure on whatever way. You hold something over their head, some kind of charge for whatever, if they don't cooperate and tell the truth about this night. You know, the thing, being an ex-cop, and I got a lot of respect for cops. I got many good friends across the country. Unfortunately, sometimes nowadays, different from my time, sometimes nowadays they close cases too quickly. They don't delve into them enough, and it's kind of like, well, I'm sorry, you know, they give that standard line, no one forced your kid to do this. I'm sorry, ma'am, but that's the end of the case. My question, though, my question to the police officer is, what if that was your son? What if that was your brother or somebody? Would you be so quick to close the case if you knew that Mary and Joe brought the drugs that killed your brother? Would you be so quick to... And every time I ask a cop that, if I'm having a little debate with them, they'll all stutter and say, well, I don't know. Well, you can't, I don't know. You can't say, well, for the stranger it's fine to do, but for your kid you would delve into it more. And believe me, 97% of the police across the country are good. They're good investigators. Unfortunately, once in a while on these type of cases, it's kind of like case closed. And that's not right.
Right.
You know, it's not right at all.
No. Well, you know, I had... several attorneys that I have talked to local, they said, Judy, if you was a mayor or an attorney or a doctor's wife and your son was brought in and he was already passed away, they would have locked up somebody that day.
Oh,
and, of course, I explained to them, you know, the whole scenario, even the relative. 2 weeks after we put Jared away, he was arrested close to Andalusia, Alabama. He and two more people, and they had two small children in the vehicle with them, and it was a Roland methadone lab in their car. And of course, all three of them spent about 3 months over in Alabama in jail, and then one of them spent over a year in jail because he wanted us to the rap for everything.
And we're talking about the cousin?
Yes.
Okay.
So, you know, this is 2 weeks after we lost Jared. Here he is being arrested.
Uh-huh.
And then he tells his family members to go out and clean out his rental home while he was in jail. To me, why didn't an investigator go to Kip's house that night and do an investigation to see if there was beer cans laying around, if there was drugs present in the house? He knew that's where the party was at. And she said that Jared passed away on family property. He never did even come out to the scene of the accident, where she said that it happened. There was no mud on Jared's truck. There was no scratches on Jared's truck. There was no evidence that they were actually in the woods.
Mm-hmm.
So you're saying that...
Judy?
Yes.
This happened in what's called Santa Rosa County in Florida, right? Am I correct?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
What do you know about now? Who handled this case? Do they have sheriffs there? Do they have local police? Like who handled the case? Whose jurisdiction was that?
It was handled out of Santa Rosa County Sheriff's Department, and there was an investigator, Paul Leo.
Okay.
He
now, what,
handled Jared's case.
What do you know about the police there? What I mean by that, do these cases come down the pike a lot? Do they handle murder cases, or is this a type of a county where a lot of this stuff doesn't go on? In other words, do they have the experience in doing cases of this nature?
I cannot answer that question, but I have talked to other parents that has had teenagers, something to happen to them, and it's like they sweep them under the rug like it's an accidental death.
Yeah, see, what I always say, depending on the jurisdiction, in the town that my friend's thing happened with his son,
mm-hmm.
They didn't have a lot of experience in this. And I say a lot of times on the TV shows, you can't just open up a criminal investigation 101 handbook and know what to do. You know, in other words, obviously, you know, you don't want to be in a town where you get these every week. But you need to have somebody in that area that can come in. In other words, you throw up your hands and you say, hey, look, this is a little bit out
mm-hmm.
of our league. You know, I want to bring in some experts from the town over where they get a lot of cases like this. You see?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what needs to happen. You have to get that fresh set of eyes and ears that work these things, that are able to come in to Sheriff Tom or Marshal Bob and say, hey, man, here's what we got to do on this. We got to do this, this, and that, like Denny said before. Round up all
mm-hmm.
the usual suspects. Let's put some pressure
mm-hmm.
on them. We got to get some statements. We got to ask for polygraphs. Who's willing to give a polygraph? So, you know, it just doesn't happen. When you don't get a case like this and all of a sudden one falls in your lap, it's kind of like, okay, what do I do now in this case? They didn't teach me this in the police academy. But I just wanted to see a background on your jurisdiction
mm-hmm.
you know, how
mm-hmm.
they are and what they handle there.
Right.
Judy, let's get Vito's blood pressure up a little bit.
Okay.
When we have talked previously,
mm-hmm.
and by the way, just for to get this on the record, I did email the Santa Rosa County Sheriff's Office and advise them that we were going to be discussing Jared's case tonight. I don't
mm-hmm.
know if I didn't get any formal response, so there may or may not be someone from the from Santa Rosa listening. If they are, they're welcome to, you know, if they have any comments, they're certainly welcome to call in, and
mm-hmm.
and they can reach us, anybody, it's not just Santa Rosa County, it's 646-478-0982, 646-478-0982. But we were talking previously before the show, and you mentioned that and I believe, correct me if I'm wrong here, that no one, the woman who admitted selling the Laura tabs over this convenience store,
mm-hmm.
this the Kim girl, young woman
mm-hmm.
who was on probation and admitted having drugs that night,
mm-hmm.
using drugs that night, this Kip guy
mm-hmm.
for serving minors and possibly drugs, you know, whatever he did, and that not a single person has been arrested for anything, at all, even though
no.
you have a probationer who admits violating probation, so on and so forth. Now, I'm, you know, that isn't as serious, certainly, as some type of a homicide charge, but am I correct that not a single person, even though there was apparently quite a bit of drug activity and people admitted in some cases to taking or selling or purchasing illegal drugs, that am I correct that there has not been an arrest of any kind in this case for anything?
Not to my knowledge, there hasn't been. I was told that the lady that sold Kip and Kim, the Lord Towns, that she only got fired from the local Tom Thumb store.
But that would have had nothing to do with a legal action by the police or by the criminal justice system. That was an employer-employee thing.
Yes.
Okay, and the...
And to my knowledge, I'm not even sure, you know, her status. And I was told that she had been on probation prior, but I'm not really sure.
That's a lady from the convenience store.
Yes.
That's all the Lord.
Now the other Kim, she was on probation, which I was told that she violated her probation and that her probation officer dealt with her. Now, how they handle that, I do not know.
Mm-hmm.
And
also,
with detectives, yes.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, Kip and Kim never really said that they ever gave Jared any drugs.
No,
they
didn't.
May have taken the Loratab, but as far as they know, Jared only drank some beer that he brought himself, correct? They never said, oh, and we gave him this or that, or he did this or that. They said they gave him anything.
To my knowledge, they said that they never seen Jared with no type of drugs. Now, the beer that was purchased by the cousin.
Mm-hmm.
And I do have knowledge from photos that the Sheriff's Department took of Jared's trunk that day. He had an ice chest in the back of the trunk. The only thing that was in the ice chest was Pepsi products and a container of Gatorade. There was a beer container carton thrown in the back of the truck, which a lot of times teenagers, if they're standing around somebody's truck drinking beer, they'll do that. But there was nothing as far as present as beer being in his ice chest.
But yet he died from a fatal dose of methadone.
Correct.
Is that correct? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing.
Judy,
Yes.
Am I correct that you, at one point when you were talking to the investigator from the Santa Rosa Sheriff's Office, did you ask about making arrests, you know, regarding the sale of drugs and the supplying of drugs or alcohol, and you were told that that wasn't serious enough and that whoever was arrested would get out on bail anyway, so why go through that?
Yes, sir. This was in relevant to Kip going to the local convenience store. He and another friend and Jared, because Kip could not drive because he had his license pulled, so he was on probation. So Jared drove these two individuals to the Nugget station, and Kip went in and bought two cases of beer, which I can prove that.
Mm-hmm.
So I do know that they did go back to Kip's house because there was other teenagers there that said that Kip did bring the beer there and everybody helped themselves.
And you asked the police officer, the investigator, if they were going to charge the cousin for supplying beer to the minors?
Yes, sir, I did, and he told me, he said, what's the use of arresting him, because he's already on probation, and his parents would come down the next day and bail him out.
Vito.
Yes.
Is that a valid reason for not making an arrest, because the guy would get bailed out?
Not arresting him, you said?
Yeah, is that a valid reason not to arrest him, because in the police officer's opinion, he'd get out on bail in a day, so it would just be a waste of time?
Well, you know, Denny, if it wasn't so sad, it would be comical, some of those answers. You know, it doesn't make sense. Our case, the people in question supplied the person's name that they bought it for on the corner of such and such. I do get upset about these cases, even after all these years, Denny, because, you know, I want to see justice done the right way, especially when a case like this is pretty open and shut like mine was. And you sit there and you say, what are you talking about? What do you? Mm-hmm. I bring drugs to a poker game or something like that, and the guy dies because of the drugs I bring. I'm supposed to be arrested. This isn't. You don't have to be a Rhodes Scholar to figure this stuff out. You know,
mm-hmm.
It's a shame that it has to be that way. But you know, Judy, what you have to do mm-hmm. on our case, we kept plugging away.
Mm-hmm.
The father that I worked for, he'd get in the newspaper, reporters would say, hey, what's going on that case, Vito, or whatever. Oh, well, what's going on? We just brought in Dr. Michael Bodden, famous guy from town. Oh, really? And they do an article on that. What's going on? Well, we did this, we did that. See, fortunately, we kept pounding away, and we wouldn't let it drop. But not only that, the police chief retired, and several of the detectives and different people that were involved in the case all retired. So a fresh group of people came in. And let's
mm-hmm.
just say the new chief was more open to reopen the case, which he did. Okay, let's just say there wasn't too much love lost between him and the former chief. So this was
mm-hmm.
his way, I feel. He didn't say it, but this was his way to make a statement about it. Like, hey, okay, I don't care what my predecessor did. We're reopening the case. And, subsequently, I mean, it's a shame it took 4 years. I feel bad
mm-hmm.
for the father and mother. I saw many tears in their eyes. I saw dazed
mm-hmm.
looks. They're the ones that are dazed and confused, okay?
Mm-hmm.
When
mm-hmm.
I talked to the father and I said to him, John, how you doing today? One day when I was meeting with him, maybe a couple years after. He said, you know,
mm-hmm.
Vito, I survive. I go around. It's kind of like I'm in a cloud. I talk to people. I do my work. I do whatever else, but I'm kind of like in a daze all the time. And really, that made me think about it because, you know, somebody that loses a son or a daughter under those circumstances, we can't gauge how that would feel. Most people can't gauge.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, I've learned a lot by working these cases when they've looked at me and they said, you know, I'm in a daze. I'll say hello to you. I'll have a conversation with you. But, you know, everything's kind of like in a fog. And really,
mm-hmm.
that's how it winds up being. And a lot of times you don't know what to do. But this family here would not let it drop. And
mm-hmm.
sometimes you have to keep doing that, Judy. And
mm-hmm.
I don't want to get religious on you, but God knows the heart of a parent, especially a mother. And,
mm-hmm.
if you God will help you out in that too. Believe me, trust that. Because, I have a lot of faith. I've seen a lot of good things happen on cases. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, your case is, what, almost 2 years old now, right?
Right. October will be 2 years.
Right,
and, you
right.
know,
well,
and it's so sad because, you know, I have different people that hold high positions. It's like, you know, he's gone. Let it go. But, you know,
yes.
I wonder, what would they do if this was their child? Would they let it go?
Perfect answer. That is the appropriate answer, Judy, for what you just said in that circumstance. What would they do, okay? My fella John said, hey, I'm the only one that can speak for my son. He says, I dream about him. He comes to me in my dreams
mm-hmm.
saying, Dad, thank you. I see him on a beach, and he's thanking
mm-hmm.
me for delving into the case. See, that's what a parent does. A parent, like
mm-hmm.
this man said to me, Vito, I'm the only voice my son has, and I have
that's
a
fine.
Right. I have a right, I have an obligation to my son to speak
mm-hmm.
for him because he can't speak about it. So don't let
mm-hmm.
anybody tell you to move on. You know, people
mm-hmm.
always say, well, don't, you know, time heals all wounds and this and that
mm-hmm.
and the whole bit. And it's a little bit right. But, you know, when you want justice for your child, you go to your grave wanting justice, you know. I'm not trying to get dramatic with you, but, you know, you don't rest a
mm-hmm.
day in your life fully until you achieve some kind of justice, you know?
That's true.
What has to happen. But, you know, there's power in these shows, okay? This show
mm-hmm.
right here, TV shows, the blog talk radio shows, there is
mm-hmm.
power in these shows, okay? This
mm-hmm.
goes out across the country.
Mm-hmm.
I've made many friends on blog talk radio that are, you know, my friends, whether on Facebook or communicate with me. And people talk about these things. People get mad about them. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, Denny and Kim do a great job on this show, as well as many other people on the blog talk. That's why you got to just keep
mm-hmm.
doing this. Let the authorities get
mm-hmm.
mad. What do you have to lose?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, let the authorities get mad at you. Big deal. Your
mm-hmm.
your boy is not here. You are fighting for your son. If they get mad and say, why don't you give this up? I'm not going to give it up. I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I'm doing another radio show 2 days from now, you say to them, or something like that, you know? And that's it.
Right. Yeah. And I want to. I want to, you know. I lost one son in 87 in a car accident. And, you know, it was understandable. You know, he went in a car accident. And it took years to try to find peace. And this, we had three boys. We lost our oldest son at the age of 12 in 87. Jared was our baby, and, of course, we lost him. And, you know, and his life was just so good. It was just so fulfilling. He had college. He had a Bright Future scholarship. He was working, and it seemed like life was just going so good for him. And, you know, though I have to let him go, but I need answers. I want justice for Jared. And, you know, somebody holds some type of responsibility, just like the cell phone calls, which I was going
to
bring that up to. You know, Kip said that Jared dropped him off, you know, around 10:30 that night. How could Jared drop him off at 10:30, 11 o'clock, and all three of them were seen at 1:40 Friday morning? Jared's last telephone call that night was around 10:30. That was the last call that night until 3:14, I believe, or 3:19. So I know where Jared was at 1:40, but I don't know where Jared, Kip, and Kim was at from 1:40 until she got him to the hospital at 11 o'clock. There was one call made on Jared's phone at 3:19, but on Kip and Kim's phone, cell phone, Kim calls Jared's phone around 2:05. She calls twice, and there's no answer. Why would Kimberly be calling Jared's cell phone at 2:05 if she was supposed to have been spending the night with Jared? And there was constantly phone calls between Kip and Kimberly. And I don't understand why they would not ask questions about the cell phone records.
How did the police explain? And I'll sound this off Vito, too. Vito, if you were investigating a case as a police officer, and you were dealing with some people, you know, this is a small community, rural community, the Santa Rosa County, and my understanding is it's one where everybody knows everybody and so on and so forth, and you knew you were dealing with some people who had some run-ins with the law, maybe not the most upstanding citizens in the county, and you were questioning these people, would you want to know if they were telling you the truth? I mean, would you just accept their statements on the face, or would you want to do some other checking to corroborate what they were telling you and see if they were being honest with you?
Well, Jenny, having done that many times as a police department detective, I would want to talk to them as many times as I'm going to be allowed to, okay, unless they got lawyered up or just refused to talk, because I want to sit across the table and say to them, because, see, when you tell the truth, Denny, you have nothing to lie. You tell the same story every single time. You don't have to think. You don't have to think about anything. The truth is the truth, okay? If you're walking down Main Street and, yeah, I saw the accident over here and this guy did that, you tell the same story every time, okay? When you lie, you have to continuously remember what you said 3 weeks ago, okay? And that's where the discrepancies come in. So, you know, if I'm sitting across the table from her, I'm saying, okay, help me out here now. What exactly happened, and did you make any cell phone calls? Now, maybe the third time I'm talking to her, she may say, no, I didn't make any cell phone calls. Then, bango, you hit her with, well, last time we talked a month ago, you said you made 2 phone calls or this or that. I mean, see, in other words, that's what you keep doing. You try to have something. You try to have some other charges, though, too, that you could. You know, how many times do we watch television on a case and somebody's suspected of doing something? Then you hear they landed in jail right now on other charges right now. They're being held on other charges. That's good for the police because it gives them time to you know, investigate the case and do what they have to do. But to answer your question again, Denny, I would try to talk to him as many times as possible, ask him if I could videotape it, the whole bit, and just, you know, continually see how many different stories they tell on these things, you know. And then if I'm a private detective doing that, I bring those tapes or whatever to the police and say, hey, look, Captain, is this enough evidence to get this case reopened? I got three statements from her. All three are different. You know, I mean, one big case I did not too long ago, the lawyer, we had found two different statements so far apart that the subject had given. And when the lawyer got him on the stand, he brought the two statements up to the guy, and he said, hey, Denny, before I ask any questions, take a couple minutes, read statement one, read statement B. Let me know which one we're going with today. And, you know, the other side started yelling, screaming, well, you know, Your Honor, I just want to see. They're two totally different statements. I just want to know which one I should question them on. You know, that kind of a thing. But that's what happens with people, you know. When you lie, you don't remember from a month, 3 months, when you re-question them. But, you know, so, I mean, that's about what I could say on that, Denny.
And let me follow up with this. If during your series of interviews and the first interview, you were told, oh, no, we parted company at 10:30, 11 o'clock at night. The two of us took off to this wooded area and spent the night. And the two survivors of the threesome both say that they had no contact after this 10:30 or 11 o'clock at night split up. And then you find cell phone records or somebody brings them to your attention indicating a rash of activity at 4:30 in the morning, 8 o'clock in the morning, when these people supposedly are asleep. Would you want to, your next interview with these parties, would you maybe raise that issue? Say, hey, you know, you told me last time you were in here you had no contact, yet we show 7 phone calls.
Yeah,
between your phones.
Yeah, depending on the case, sometimes you hold things close to the vest. On a case like this, though, I'd lean across the table, pointing my finger at them, and say, "You told me lies. You told me lies last time. I talked to this one, and I talked to that one, that disputed everything that you told me the last time. Now, do you want me to charge you with false information to a police officer, or whatever? Anything I could think of to say that, you know, just to put the pressure on them. But no, I mean, when a police officer, and I've been there, catches somebody in a lie, then bingo, you've had it. Because then they're all over you, watching you, knowing that, hey, this person is involved somehow. You've lied to me. Every time you turn a corner, you're going to see me. You know, that kind of a situation. You know, until you're told to stop, or the lawyer jumps in and says you're harassing them or something like that. But
right.
You try to do everything the proper legal way, Denny.
Judy, when the police became aware, now I don't know if you were the catalyst for the cell phone records, if the police obtained them on their own or how this worked out, but how when they found out about these phone calls that were made, these several phone calls at 2 o'clock in the morning, all of them seem a little odd because presumably these people had no contact with each other after 11 o'clock at night, but how did they follow up and bring Kip and Kim in separately and question them about these cell phone calls? And if so, how did they explain away these cell phone calls when they supposedly had no contact?
Well, I'm going to back up a little bit. Whenever we lost Jared, the phone was given to him so he can look at Jared's phones for information. A few weeks passed, I called him and questioned about the cell phone calls, which I did all the legwork. I got copies of Jared's cell phone records, got Jared's cell phone records through the detective. I inquired about Kip's phone, and he seemed like he wasn't interested in pulling Kip's records nor Kim's records. I did have the source of information to get Kip's cell records, which I did, and I forwarded them on to the investigator. Later, I had to really put some pressure on. The state attorney's office had to get a court order to require Kim's cell phone records, which I do have a copy of them. But it was like they wasn't really interested in the cell phone records. And to my knowledge, neither one of them has even been questioned about the cell phone records, which I think that is a very important issue, because Kip says Jerry drops him off at 10:30, 11 o'clock that night. He does not see, talk to Jared until that following morning whenever he calls me inquiring about Jared. Kim mm-hmm. said that she and Jared went to the woods and they fell asleep. And when she woke up, Jared was not responding. Well, then how could she be asleep and she's on her cell phone back and forth with Kip?
Interesting question.
And then also, whenever she got Jared to the hospital that morning, Kip nor Kim was tested for drugs, and she was not even tested as far as having sex, if they even did. And I asked the investigator about this. He said that that was just really irrelevant, because he asked both of them, were they on prescriptive medicine, and what all did they take that night? So he basically just took their word.
Now, Judy, when you eventually, when you weren't satisfied with some of the aspects of the investigation by Santa Rosa County, you did then make efforts to contact other Florida agencies to see if you could get another look, someone else interested. Am I correct on that?
Correct. I talked to a couple other attorneys in reference to Jared's case.
Okay. Attorneys, you mean private attorneys or government agency?
Yes, sir. They were private attorneys to
uh-huh.
see if I needed to pursue this. And I had three or four that I spoke with on the internet that kind of advised me no, because Escambia County and Santa Rosa County is like side by side, and Santa Rosa County uses Escambia County's facilities, so they kind of work hand in hand, and it's like nobody wants to make somebody else mad. I've had other attorneys that have responded to me through email, as well as verbally talking to them on the telephone. They said, you need to go for it because you do have a case.
Now, what's the name of the other county you said was a neighboring county?
Escambia County.
Escambia, okay. Did you also approach either the Florida Department of Law Enforcement or the state attorney's office looking to see if they would take a look at the case?
The state attorney's office, they have looked at it in the past, and they're still looking at it.
So they
and
have not closed it?
There has been some new evidence, and they are pursuing it right now, which I hope that they do, because there was a lot of those teenagers that was never questioned. There was an individual that was there. They said that he was actually selling drugs, which I told the investigator his name, his address, where to find him at. And to my knowledge, he was never questioned.
So when you say you told the investigator, you're talking about the Santa Rosa investigator?
Santa Rosa.
That's
mm-hmm.
And
yes,
now
sir.
The state attorney is taking a second look. Is that kind of what's going on?
Yes, sir. They are. And I've also talked with the state attorney. It's been probably about 6 months ago they were looking into it. And he also talked to Kim and Kip again. And he said basically their stories were basically the same. They were kind of wishy-washy. And also I do have a DVD with Kim's statement being given, And it was like the investigator was just feeling so sorry for this young lady with a couple of kids. And it was like, you know, he was telling her everything. And to me, it was like he was putting words in her mouth on what to say. And to me, that's not the way you would conduct an investigation. And I was just very, very disappointed. And, of course, she was crying. He was giving her tissues to wipe her eyes. And it was like he was just feeling sorry for her. Like, you know, how in the world could somebody want to lock up this poor woman with two little children, you know?
Do you think, now you have the state attorney looking at this, is Santa Rosa County still investigating too? So are there two agencies looking into this, or is it primarily the state attorney's office?
Well, to my knowledge, the state attorneys here in Santa Rosa County also work in Escambia County as well, because the counties are so close together. So the state attorney's office looked into it one time, and then he basically wrote me a letter, and it was a nice letter saying that he had looked into it and questioned Kip and Kimberly again. And I asked him for a copy of the statement, which he did not have any copies. And I thought that was kind of odd. And then he wrote me a nice little letter stating the Good Samaritan Act. Mm-hmm. Because that was a question that I had. I said, you know, if Jared was in trouble and he asked for someone to take him to the hospital, should they immediately seek help? And the state attorney's answer was, and he went into it over the phone with me, he said, you know, if I was a doctor and I was sitting next to you in a restaurant and you were choking to death, I do not have to help you. And I said, you're telling me that my son could actually lay there and die, begging somebody to take him to the hospital, and they can actually just watch him die. And his answer was yes.
Judy, I'd like me.
Judy,
I'd like to read that law for our listeners. It's Florida Statute 768.13, and this is for 2007. And the beginning part of it says that the Good Samaritan Act provides protection against civil liability to anyone who gratuitously and in good faith renders emergency care to an injured person outside of a hospital, doctor's office, or other place, having proper medical equipment. And then it goes on to say the law has persistently refused to recognize the moral obligation of common decency and common humanity to come to the aid of another human being who is in danger, even though the outcome is to cost him his life. And he gives a scenario, and this is from Mr. Rimmer. The expert swimmer with a boat and a rope at hand who sees another drowning before his eyes is not required to do anything at all about it, but may sit on the dock, smoke a cigarette, and watch the man drown. Now, this is what the Florida statute basically says.
Mm-hmm.
And I just am floored by that. And he went on to say, even if Kimberly was aware that something was wrong with Jared long before she claims that she was aware, neither she nor anyone else was under any legal obligation to do anything.
Mm-hmm.
How awful is that?
Well,
Getty,
being a mother,
it's
very hurtful.
Yeah, well, it is to anyone. What do you think of that, Vito?
Well, obviously it's true what you said. You read it right from the what the law's there. But let's deal on what we're talking about here, your case, my case, drugs, okay? Drugs.
Yeah.
These people have died from drugs, and that's the whole thing. Judy, do you know if any of those suspects were ever tested for drugs shortly after this all happened, drugs in their system?
2 weeks after Jared's passing, Kip was arrested in Alabama. So I'm sure that they tested him then.
Well, you know, that is 2 weeks. I mean, even though it could be in the system still, that's, I mean, that, you know, I'm talking about, like, right after this happened, you know, you asked voluntarily,
no, sir.
Can we test you, you know? Because, you know, what she read in the law is the law. I mean, you know, some people, one thing about me, I've never learned how to swim in my life. God forbid, if I'm in a situation where I can't get a drowning person some kind of device or something like that, I can't swim, okay? But I can understand that part of the law. The only difference, though, is we're talking about drugs that caused the death in your case, drugs that caused the death in my investigation here, and things of that nature. That's when a whole different ball game comes in. But it's a very, I'm glad she read that, because that is very interesting to the listeners of the show, just to actually hear how that's stated, you know?
Well, you know, I was floored the morning that Jared was brought to the hospital, that these two people may have had something to do with Jared's death. They were at a party. There was possibly drugs there. There was possibly alcohol, which we know that there was. Why didn't the investigator ask them, would you mind going to the hospital so we can run a test on you? Or if they refused, why couldn't he get a court order to have it done?
Well, I mean, that's what should have happened. You know, in retrospect, that's the proper, again, getting back to Investigations 101. There's a procedure that you do, just like you mark off a crime scene, and then you do this, you do that, you separate the witnesses, separate the subjects, I mean, and the whole bit. I mean, you know, 2 weeks later being arrested doesn't mean anything. He could have taken drugs after the death of your child or before the death, whatever. I mean, what you said is the right way. That same day. Hey, do I have the cooperation to do this? Do we have the cooperation of you guys to help us out on this so we could put this case to rest? And, I mean, that's the way to do it. But it wasn't done, so that's the problem here.
And I found that was mighty strange. You know, why weren't they tested? And if she said that she and Jared spent the night, did they have sex? If they did, is she pregnant?
Well,
I mean,
you know,
that they're... That,
you know, going back to that, you know, that other thing. I'm still boiling over that other comment that the police made to you about, you know, arresting the drug dealer because he'll get out on bond anyway. So, I mean, yeah, it's so ridiculous. So, you know, Joe is beating up his wife, Mary, in the house and beats her up. And so the police dispatcher says, Bob, don't even worry about rushing over there. That's Joe. You know, he beats her up all the time. You know, and why should we arrest Joe? He'll just get a bondsman. He'll get out of jail. I mean, again, if it wasn't so sad, it's comical. So, in other words, the drug pusher, sure, everybody has a right to bail, of course. I mean, you know, if you're arrested, you're going to try to get out on bail. But for police to give a statement, what are we going to arrest Denny Griffith for? He's just going to get a bondsman and get out of jail. I mean, it's terrible. It really is terrible here. Denny, you know, my first day of vacation, I'm away here. You're ruining my vacation with this case. I'm gonna be steamed for the next 5 days thinking about this.
Judy, I do have to ask you about this now. Someone in the chat room is saying that Kim called her sister. And actually, her sister came with her to the hospital when they dropped Jared off. Is that correct?
I was told when she got Jared to the hospital, she claimed that she was Jared's girlfriend, Jared was in trouble, she didn't know what to do. The lady that went to Jared said that Jared was slightly upright and said that he was slightly warm to the touch. And she said that she kept on asking Kimberly, what did he take? What did he take? What did he take? Kim's sister was there, and she kept on telling Kim, don't answer none of her questions. And here, you know, there's a professional nurse there that was trying to, you know, get information so they could help Jared. And here her sister was there advising her, do not say anything.
It just seems it's obvious that Kim had called her sister, you know, between, yeah, between driving past the hospital, driving past your house, going to Kip's, all her driving around in her panic, she was able to call her sister also, and her sister met her at the hospital.
Uh-huh.
Maybe her sister helped her dress Jared and helped her load him into the truck as well. I mean, it's just, why was she even there? It's just, and she didn't even call 911, but she was able to do all these other things.
Uh-huh.
Very odd. Uh-huh. Very odd state
yeah.
of affairs.
Well, with Jared's cell phone records, like I said, his last call was around 10:30. And then Kim calls him at 2:05 twice. He does not respond to the phone call.
She's with him.
Okay.
That time.
From
yeah.
around
yeah.
2:05 until about 8:30. Well, it may have been a little bit earlier than that. Kim and Kip had constant contact with each other on the phone.
Mm-hmm.
Kip called Jared's phone at 3:19. And I think they talked around 21 minutes, if Jared talked. My scenario, by looking at everything, which Jared had spent the night over at Kip's house before, and I think maybe Jared got comfortable at Kip's house with him being in his boxers and socks, and maybe
mm-hmm.
something happened at Kip's house, and Kip got into a panic. And then he starts calling Kim for help. And maybe he played it off by calling Jared's phone, maybe, because I'm sure Jared had his phone right there with him. And maybe he just turned the phone on for 21 minutes to make it look like he and Jared was in a conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And then after the 3:19 conversation, there was no more phone calls on Jared's phone. But there was phone calls between Kip and Kimberly. So how could Kip be home asleep if he was on the phone?
Right.
And then if this is a big if Jared passed away at Kip's home, it's a good possibility that Kip and Kim were strong enough to load Jared in his truck, and Kim drove him to the hospital.
I'm glad you
because
said that, too. I'm glad you said
not,
that, too.
I do not believe her story. And after I had found out that she said that they were on our property, I drove around on our four-wheeler on our property, because if you're going to be drinking or smoking or any activity out in the woods, there's going to be some type of evidence laying on the ground, and I could not find any evidence. And later on, I started thinking, why didn't the investigator go to Kip's house? Because that was where the party was at. If Kim said that everything went down in the woods, why didn't he come out to the wooded area where she said that she was at and look around? And I thought that was mighty strange that he did not do that.
Mm-hmm.
What were you going to say, Vito? You said you were glad. I was
going to say, when she mentioned about her son possibly being at the lady's house when this did happen.
No, this is his cousin's house.
Oh, the
cousin's
house. I'm sorry.
Yes.
And distress happens there. He stops breathing, whatever the situation may be. Sure, the thing for them to do is to carry him, get him back in the truck, because otherwise that house is a crime scene, and everything's going to get gone through, and everything else. I mean, you know, people that don't have any morals have no qualms with, hey, let's move him. Let's put him in this truck and bring him over here or bring him over there, because I can't afford to go to jail because of this thing, that kind of thing. So I'm glad you said that. I was kind of, you know, one scenario. There's many scenarios to this, but that was kind of one of them in the back of my mind that could have possibly
uh-huh.
happened.
Uh-huh. And then that's why I kind of felt like he called me that morning. Because, see, I was en route to go to Birmingham to take his sister, who had cancer, back to Birmingham and I was going to stay a few days with her in Birmingham. I think he called me to check to see if I was at home. And if I wasn't at home, it's a good possibility they may would have just drove Jared's truck over here, parked it in my driveway, and left. Like Jared came home from the night, and he died in his truck. Because he never calls me.
I found it odd, too, that Jared would be, she would wake up and find herself in the driver's seat, and he would be in the passenger seat. It just doesn't sound like something that sounds feasible if you're a guy and you have a
truck. It wouldn't. Mm-hmm. Jared wouldn't let nobody drive his truck. He was always under the wheel. And I talked to his friends. They said, Miss Judy, she's not Jared's type. Jared may would have took her home, dropped her off, or if they did go to the woods, he may have took her to the woods, did what they needed to do, and then he would have took her straight home, and he would have came home.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, all of his close friends that I have, you know, confided in, they said it didn't happen like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, Judy, you're saying there's a possibility that the story that this Kim and Kip had told the police could have been actually backwards, that maybe Kim was the one that went home early or split up earlier, and it was it was Kip and Jared at Kip's house, and then something happened, especially if there were drugs in that house or whatever was on there. Kip didn't want the police snooping around, so he calls Kim to say, hey, better get over here, we got problems. Come on over and help me out. Yeah, and just to make sure I have this right again, I asked you earlier, I believe, but I just want to do this one more time for my own benefit. We are saying that, to your knowledge, the police did not visit, much less search, Kip's house, and they did not go out on your property where Kim alleges she and Jared spent the night, so they did not even attempt to find the location on your property, and they didn't go to Kip's house and look around or ask permission to look around or anything that was never done?
No, sir. Not on my property. And as far as I know, they did not go to Kip's house, because that afternoon some of Jared's friends said that they had passed by Kip's house and Kim was there, and some of other Kip's friends was there, and they were out drinking their beer. So, you know, to my knowledge, my property, the investigator did not come out to my property, and to my knowledge, they did not go to Kip's house.
Now, if you know, if that's true, like you were saying, to your knowledge, and maybe there were things done that you're not aware of, and maybe the police could come up with perfectly reasonable explanations for not, for what they did or didn't do. I don't know. I haven't talked to the Santa Rosa Sheriff's Office or the investigator, so I don't know what, you know, why they did what they did or why they didn't do certain things. But I certainly can see from your perspective that there are reasons to be concerned about what was done and what wasn't done.
And especially the phone calls. Because to me, if you want to know where your teenager has been or who your teenager is talking to, all you got to do is pull their cell phone records. And usually that there can answer your questions. Who are their friends that they're talking to?
And
who
they
are
can,
the friends
they can,
that are calling in?
Right. And they can explain away who gave who what drugs and who bought what beer, but they can't explain the hard evidence of those cell phone records.
That's right. That's right. And, you know, and also, you know, with the individual that they said that was there selling drugs, I have passed that information on to the investigator as well as the state attorney's office. And right now, he has not even been called in to be questioned. But, you know, to me, I mean, it's right there in front of my eyes, you know, what happened that night and who's responsible for Jared's accident. But it seems like that the investigator, they're wanting to sweep this under the rug like it's another teenager, OD'd, let's move on to the next case. But how would he feel if that was his son? Would he do that? Or would he be on his P's and Q's and do everything in his power to try to find out the answers to his questions that he has inside?
Yeah, and were there any fingerprints? Did they try to get any fingerprints lifted from the interior of the truck?
Yes, ma'am, they did. Yes, ma'am, and they said they were Jared, Kipps, and Kim's.
Okay.
And also, another point on the truck. Whenever I went to pick Jared's truck up, his boots was on the hump between the passenger seat and the driver's seat, like somebody took his boots and actually placed them on that hump. His cell phone, which was given to the policeman at the police office, I questioned it whenever I went to pick up Jared's truck because they only had his wallet and his keys, and I said, where's Jared's phone? Well, nobody knew. They called the investigator. He did not know. So we started looking through Jared's truck, and we found Jared's cell phone on the pouch on the driver's side of the door.
Yeah, very odd. Well, everyone, we are down to our last 3 minutes, and the lights are blinking, so we should say goodbye. Judy, thank you so much for being with us tonight. And would you come back? Would you want to come back sometime and discuss this again with us and maybe give us an update?
We would love to have you.
And
thank you so much for having me.
Oh, you're welcome. And Vito,
yes.
Private Investigator Extraordinaire, thank you again for being with us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure to be on your show there.
Thanks, Vito.
And you are the best, and now go and enjoy your vacation. Right?
Thank you very much. Good night, Denny.
Thanks, Vito. Enjoy.
And I did want to say that if you want your case profiled, please email myself or Denny Griffin. And my email is kim@crimeandmystery.com, or you can email Denny Griffin at griff1945@hotmail.com. And we look forward to hearing from you. And I want to thank everybody who joined us tonight, and I guess that's it. Denny?
We're going to have another show on the 8th of September, and that's going to be another a Florida case, and it's going to be Joey Turner, so the death of Joey Turner. We'll be talking about that 2 weeks from tonight. And we've got several special shows coming up. You want to tell them about the 15th, Kim?
Yes, we have Pat Carista coming on. She is a private investigator who has helped out many of the cases that you'll hear on our show she is involved with. And let's see, on the 22nd, we have Ricky Dyer. And then on the 29th of September, we have Dwayne Bowers, who's a grief specialist who works with families who have lost loved ones. So we hope to see you on our upcoming show. Please join us.
Thanks, Kim. Talk to you later.
Okay. Well, thank you, everyone. Good night,
everybody.
And God bless.
Good night now.
Good night.